Halton here. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop advanced safety equipment with performance and protection in perfect balance, like Globe Athletics, the latest innovation in turnout gear. Developed as athletic gear for firefighters, Athletics uses unique stretch fabrics that provide body contoured fit for unprecedented range of motion and flexibility. It's lighter weight, less bulky, and provides the protection you need from your turnout gear. Get the full story at msafire.com/globe.
Welcome to Fool's Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Robbie Fisher, Training Trustee, Education Chair, Fool's International. I hope this podcast is finding you all well this morning, this afternoon, today, this evening, whenever you're connecting in with us. We're just glad to have you along for the ride. Oh, wow. It's been probably, 8 months since COVID shut almost everything down. We're now in the fall. And I think like a dark, nasty hallway, we're making the turn into the fire room to confine and control this thing. So hopefully we get to some normalcy here in the next month or two, and we can start, getting back to our normal lives. As always, we want to thank Bobby Halton and the staff at Fire Engineering for giving us the forum to share our opinions and ideas. We're truly grateful for the opportunity to be able to be on Blog Talk Radio with them. A little bit of Fool's news. Convention, that was canceled back the summertime, but there are no plans currently for 2021 yet. As you all know, we canceled the convention. It was being hosted by the Treasure Coast and Central Florida Fools. As an e-board, we voted to give those two chapters the opportunity to be able to host the 2021 convention. So as soon as Tim Bob and Jimmy Meyer can get a plan together, we'll get it out to you through our social media outlets. It'll be on our website, foolsinternational.com. Speaking of our website, Christmas is around the corner, so... if you need to get some merchandise, you can go to our website. On the left-hand side, almost to the bottom, you'll see a link called Shop, and that connects you in with our merchandise, our store. So get some of your brothers and sisters some Fool's merchandise for Christmas. All right, on to the interview. My interview is with a good friend and brother from the Ozark Mountain Fools, Adam Neff. Adam is an assistant chief with the Nixa Fire Department in Southwest Missouri. We talk about basically his chapter, the things that his chapter does, why they exist. I asked him about the Ozarks and what impact the Navarro cartel has had in their area, and if Ruth is really a productive member of their chapter. So I'm just kidding. I did ask him about the show Ozarks, and he said it's not real. So like a lot of things we're finding out on the internet, it's not true. So, but in all seriousness, we talked about his chapter, and I wanted to talk to him about higher education and how it fits in the fire service. Basically, what role does it have? I know that it has been a bone of contention for some people, where there have been debates over we need more tradesmen in the fire service, not college students or college educated individuals. We need people that can do the job. And I think from the interview, you're going to find out that we're in line with that opinion. But Adam has had a journey with college education, so it's great to get his perspective and how he sees things. So The interview was great. So enjoy. And yeah, thanks for connecting in with us. And as always, you can't always be safe out there, but you can be smart. So be smart out there. Thanks for joining. Enjoy.
Thank you, everybody, for joining Fool's Block Talk Radio on Fire Engineering. And like usual, just thank you, Bobby Halton and Fire Engineering, for allowing us to have the opportunity to have a voice and share information. Today, my guest is going to be Adam Neff, chief out of NCSA. Is that what it is?
NCSA, yep. Southwest Missouri.
NCSA, Southwest Missouri, and also a member of the Ozark Mountain Fools. And today we're gonna talk about one. I've known Adam for a long time. We've been good friends and sharing stuff for quite a many years. And we've been on a college journey together. So we're gonna talk a little bit about higher education, secondary education related to firefighters. And that's always a point of contention with some people. But I think this will be good for us to discuss and kind of get varying perspectives. And I thought it would be great to just kind of talk to Adam and see how things are going in his neck of the woods and what he's got going on. So for everybody, Adam, why don't you kind of give us how many years you've been in the fire service, how you got in the fire service, maybe some of your personal life stuff, what do you got going on, and then we'll get into the chapter.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on. And, of course, Chief Bobby Halton, such a great advocate for the Fools and stuff, and just the fire service in general. So I'm a big fan. So I started 2 weeks before my 15th birthday. Like a lot of other folks, I started as a cadet volunteer, and I was raised in a single parent home that my mother worked overnights in a factory. And so, as you can imagine, when she went to work, we were left up to our own devices. It was the late 80s, so we didn't have some of the concerns that we do now. And then as I got a little bit older, started getting into a little bit more trouble. And my mother was an EMT firefighter at the local volunteer department in NCSA. And she talked to the fire chief. And, yeah, 2 weeks before my 15th birthday, I was scrubbing floors and washing fire trucks. And I did that for about 7 years, and I got hired full-time in June of 01. And then, of course, September 11th happened. I worked 5 years or so as a driver and then promoted to captain. Worked as a captain for about 5 years as well, and then got promoted to battalion chief and spent 8 years in the battalion chief role before I got promoted to assistant chief. So I currently serve as the assistant chief of training and additional duties assigned. We all know what that means. So, but I love it. Yeah. So I've been in total 26 years in the fire.
So let's talk about the additional duties assigned, a little bit about your department. I don't know exactly how big we're talking. So sometimes in some organizations, when you get in the role of battalion chief, DC, division chief, assistant chief, you know, you might be playing other roles. So let's talk a little bit about the size of your organization and what other roles you end up having to do in your department.
Yeah, we have exponential growth in our area. So even during the economic downturn, we still saw booming housing going on. So slowed down for us, but virtually non-existent for everybody else. That's just kind of how our area has been. So when I started in 01, there was 6 line firefighters total. So 2 guys a day. And here we are now 19 years later, and I have 11 guys a day on shift. So the battalion chief truly is the battalion chief. He is the shift supervisor. So we operate out of 3 staff stations. So we're all career. We have no volunteers. We have 3 officer positions. Everybody's expected to drive at some level. So we don't do a promoted driver position. And then we have a battalion chief. And so battalion chief handles the, you know, day-to-day operations, staffing, scheduling, payroll at that level. And then they're operationally focused. We did just add an administrative battalion to kind of help out with some of the administrative functions and help develop the battalion chief before they make the jump to that full-time administration. So we have two assistant chiefs and then the fire chief, and we do have an HR manager lady that has kind of in the same sense done a lot in the same way as I have and built her position up and grown with the organization. And so the HR manager position's new for us. A lot of fire districts in the area don't have an HR specific person. It's just kind of handled by everybody and it's additional duties assigned. So originally when I got promoted in 2018, training was my main focus. I was hired as the assistant chief of training. It was a new position for our organization. We had it in the past about 7 years ago, and then we had brought it back. Our department had grown enough to where really organizationally, and that's what was holding us back, in my opinion. Always had a class one ISO training portion. So we always got maximum points for training, but organizationally, the fire chief at the time believed that having a training person to kind of corral everybody and get them pushing the same direction is what needed to happen. And actually through the strategic planning, the organization felt the same way as well. So that was the number one thing that was listed was a training position. So, and then this past year, the fire chief had retired, new fire chief who was the deputy, kind of did a reorganization of things. And then this past March, additional duties assigned was all the day-to-day operational stuff was also assigned to me to oversee the battalion chiefs and that kind of stuff. So I all the training stuff and then all of the day-to-day operational stuff as well. So kind of a little bit about our organization. We run about 4,000 calls a year.
Okay. So you basically, you're kind of like in a lot of departments, they call it the ops slash training chief. So you handle a lot of the operational stuff. So, okay, good. So let's get into your chapter. Tell us a little bit about the Ozark Mountain Fools. I mean, I watched the Ozarks on Netflix, so I'm wondering where Ruth fits into all of this.
Well, so many things I want to say, and I'm not sure if they're appropriate for the podcast. But so the Ozarks, the TV show, based out of Lake of the Ozarks, which is about 2.5 hours north. Our area is a little bit more closer to Appalachian type of a mindset. So I don't know if it's any better. It's just a little different. The Ozark Mountain Fools was started in 2012. And I was one of the founding 13 members. And really, just like a lot of Fools chapters, it was really kind of driven out of a need that we had a gap in our area. And you really kind of, for training, you really went one of two directions. And if you didn't go one of those two directions, it really didn't exist in our area. So me and a whole bunch of other guys, 13 other guys, got together and decided, hey, there's this organization, and it wasn't real big. None of us really knew a whole lot about Fools in this part of our state. Of course, Muddy River Fools was a big chapter up in St. Louis. Lake of the Ozarks had a chapter, but they weren't super active at the time. So really we started it and, you know, like a lot of other places, just kind of floundered, jumped from thing to thing. And we kind of had an idea about how we wanted to take memberships on. We kind of had an idea about, you know, new members prospecting. We wanted people to contribute to the fire service. We had enough people taking from the fire service. So if they were looking to collect a t-shirt or something along those lines, we probably wasn't going to be a good fit for our chapter. So we lost members, we gained members. But really we kind of evolved. We had a lot of small, we've got a lot of, if you're not familiar, dues and subscription type of fire departments in the surrounding area, which are, they're kind of non-incorporated areas that pay a membership fee to the fire department, kind of like the old school insurance hallmarks. You know, you had a sign on your mailbox, and if you paid your $25 for the year, the fire department would come, and if you didn't, you'd have a chance to pay it when your house is on fire. But Don't expect anybody to respond. So we had departments in the news talking about shutting down because of lack of volunteers. Had an idea of going, well, maybe we could do a work day and go to that department if we're invited and cover calls, do light maintenance, clean, that kind of stuff. And then one of our wiser older members said, that's a huge liability risk. Maybe we should just focus on doing training. So then that's what we did. We had my department, Nixa, was a huge supporter. We had just bought a forcible entry prop in 2012 as well. And they allowed us to take that prop and go anywhere in the Southwest Missouri region to do basic forcible entry classes. And it kind of evolved from there. We had a local restoration company that was a huge supporter that would donate supplies and snacks and drinks and those kinds of things. And we never charged anybody to, and we're talking basic company level drills. You weren't going to get a certificate. You were just going to get solid firefighters that loved training, that loved learning from other people and saying, hey, here's a way. It's not the way, it's best practices that are coming from people that do this stuff way more than what we did in Southwest Missouri. We're just passing along the knowledge, and we had this forceful entry prop. And then about 3 years of doing that, and almost, I mean, there were months at a time that we would go every single weekend. We were traveling an hour or 2 hours away to do training because we figured if they wanted it to train, then we could give up the Saturday to give it. And really what it did was it brought up the fire service knowledge in the whole region, and it really burned us out from traveling every weekend. So there's always a good and a bad. Then we started with, we're neighbors with Branson, Missouri. Well, they're a tourist town, and when they're coming up out of the wintertime, it's really kind of slow. So we thought, man, how good would it be if we could do a conference and then buy our own door prop with proceeds. And after 2 years of doing a conference, we had enough funds saved up to be able to purchase our own forcible entry prop. And then word gets around, and then I had five other departments want to know what door prop we had purchased. And for me, I was in it for about 6 months before I was voted in as a trustee of training. And of course, it got a little restructured there early on, but I was a trustee of training, and everybody bought door props, and we had a great conference. It was two full days of one full day of hands-on and then one full day of speaker for $50. And we gave you a t-shirt if you came for both days. And, you know, we just had people from all over the region and the tri-state area coming to this conference. So it just kind of iterated to us the need for just really down and dirty company drills. I mean, that's really what we were doing. We had a lot of support from Engine House Training, a lot of support from other Fools members. Arthur Ashley came in, Mike Torres, it came down. So that's really what we kind of just try to keep it focused on, low cost or free, because of our neighboring departments, and the majority of them were volunteer. Didn't have the funds or the ability to send people to, you know, the northern part of the states or big national conferences. So we had a lot of auxiliaries, ladies auxiliaries feed us lunch, or the department had a big, meal spread for us after we got done training. It was just, you know, old school fellowship firefighting is really kind of what it boiled down to. And we got our niche in the region was through training.
I think what most people don't realize, not being a part of a Fools chapter, I mean, obviously our reputation, sadly, is, you know, we're just a bunch of drunk firemen. And yes, I use the word firemen because I think that's the separation, is the old kind, the old mentality. When in reality, as the training education trustee for the international, you know, a lot of chapters are like your chapter. You guys give more than you take from doing stuff like training. I mean, I think the majority of chapters across this nation, is focused a lot on training and providing training in areas that don't get it, like your case. And, you know, a few of them are able to get out and attend some quality training sessions or have connections with Arthur Ashley or Mike Torres or all these people that are out there that are teaching, instructing on the national level. And so you get some nuggets from them, and you come back and you're just doing a small little simple drill and you just share it with people. And, you know, $50 for a 2-day conference and you get a t-shirt. I mean, hell, the t-shirt costs 10, 15 bucks to buy and to make. And you just can't beat that. So good on you guys. Now, I mean, I'm not surprised that Lake of the Ozarks no longer exists, because, you know, Omar Navarro and the cartel probably took them out. But
probably so.
Yeah.
And then, but and the Lake Area Fools have had a resurgency in their chapter too. And as you know, when we start doing more stuff, we end up painting a big bullseye on our back. And I had, for me personally, and I will only speak about that, but our current fire chief at the time, you know, we had people had requested us to teach, and we had people from all over the area teaching. It wasn't just from my department. It was people that were from all over the different departments. And we had people requesting us to come teach, mad because they weren't getting the certificate. We had people that were mad because they didn't think we should be teaching. We were taking, you know, money away from other people. And it's like, well, they're free classes. We're not charging people for classes. If they can feed us, great. But if they can't, we'll still come and buy our own lunch. It's not a big deal. But I had a point where people were calling and then complaining, to the point where I had board members in my department keeping this completely separate, operating within what we were allowed to do. And I was told very bluntly to go, you probably need to slow down a bit because you had too many people wanting you to move on down the road because of what our chapter was doing. So we had to kind of lay dormant there for a little while because we had ruffled the feathers of the fire service in our area because we weren't providing certificates and we weren't charging anybody.
It's amazing because, I mean, I'm preaching to the choir here because I know you, and I know a number of our brothers and sisters out there that have the same problem. But the thing that just floors me is you're giving them something for free typically, or very, very, very cheap. And they're like, well, we want to get certificates out of it. A lot of departments don't even provide their own certificates, the training that they provide their own people. And it's just, you know, it's just another way to, yes, unfortunately, there is a business behind some people that go out and teach. And I'm not going to toot my own horn, but I probably volunteer or give up, you know, equal to the amount that I'm compensated for going out and teaching. And I used to do more of it. And now I just, you know, I don't do as much of it. I know there's other instructors that are out there that literally they have to increase their costs just so that they can manage their request, right? And yeah. So it does become part of the business side of things. I mean, I do want to go back to one point. I thought it was interesting that you guys were going to go out and try to help other organizations. And we're talking about the liability side of things. And I want to tie it to education. But helping out smaller organizations and just being able to be available that they can do other things or maybe give them some assistance. And it was wise of one of the older guys to say, we better not want to do that. And so one of the issues that we're struggling with in the international, and probably the biggest question I get across all the chapters, is new chapters are coming in or a new training trustee comes in or whatever, is insurance and liability. And there is no really solid answer for it. And I know all the chapters are like, hey, if there's one thing the international can do for us is create an umbrella policy that would cover all the chapters and all members. And that ain't going to happen because we're not bringing in enough money unless we want to really increase annual dues. But what do you guys do for your liability? How are you guys dealing with that?
Well, we have a very, I want to say, a generic waiver form. We kind of approached it to the fact that if your department is sending you to training, then they're well aware. And we obviously communicate that, look, you have to be sponsored by an agency. You have to be affiliated with the department. And then we're assuming, you know, you're going to get this generic liability waiver as well, but we're assuming that you're there on the department's, you know, dime, if you will, or supported by going, that you're going to be covered by your agency work comp liability insurance. So you'd have to be grossly negligent. I mean, grossly negligent for something, you know, adverse to come about you and against your chapter. So that's really kind of how we handled it. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen regardless, no matter how well you think you're covered, no matter how well you think your forms and policies are squared away. None of that stuff really matters. Nobody, I think genuinely nobody wants to get hurt. Nobody wants to be grossly negligent. But if you don't have enough people, and I'm not even talking about 1403 standards, but if you don't have enough people to safely do live fire training or any of these sets, scale it back just a skosh. I promise you, it's not going to take away from the training. It doesn't have to be the most complicated thing, because ultimately we're getting jammed up on the most simplest of things, not the complex. So that would be my advice and how we've handled it. We're assuming that that department's sending this individual, they're going to be covered by that department's work comp and liability insurance. We have a very generic liability waiver and stuff that I'm sure we pulled off the internet somewhere from somebody, or got it from a neighboring department, or, you know, I'm not sure exactly where it came from, but that's how we've kind of handled it and didn't sweat it, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, to add to that, I mean, one thing that I agree with you is look at what you're trying to do. Try to take these high risk type training. Live fire is a high risk training. You're not going to find, most are not going to give you, even if you go out and you find a broker that gives you insurance, the first thing they talk about, I mean, we haven't even, I'm talking about live fire training. When I brought up using power saws, they said, oh, you need to talk to somebody that does like big event, like concert promoters for insurance, because, you know, when they're doing pyrotechnics and everything, they got to have a certain level of insurance. I'm like, we're talking about chainsaws, and that's the level that they're talking, you know, for liability. So live fire is probably not a good thing for chapters to be doing. But the other key, and you said, you know, just pull it back a little bit. I mean, and the basics are the key to a lot of our training, just reviewing the basics. It's amazing. A number of firefighters like, oh yeah, I got it. And even today, I mean, I had a drill I had a call the other day, and I was watching a, you know, fairly experienced officer and their crew. They don't see as much fire, but they struggled a little bit the ladder. And it just reminds me that, you know, out of everything that we have to train on from day to day in our organization, just the basics, if we stay with the basics, we all need constant training on the basics. So, you know, I agree with you there. Lastly, my last point about training and liability is, all the chapters that are listening to this podcast is like, we're all different from nation, you know, from regions. So certain regions, like using a release of liability like you're using, will work fine. In certain areas, it won't work fine. And that I typically try to encourage the chapters to work on relations, foster good relationships with fire departments that can host them, and have the relationship. So the fire department hosts the training, and then as a chapter, you're the one providing the instruction. Again, that takes a good relationship with the fire department, and they realize that you guys are the subject matter experts, and that's why they're having to do it. Because ultimately, a lawyer, when they look at a chapter of 25 people that has, you know, maybe $1,000 in their savings account, an ex fire department that has a $20 million budget, they're going to go after the fire department. They're not going to waste their time on, but they can still, I mean, if you do something stupid and you're negligent, they can still come after you. And I, you know, I always encourage individual members that do a lot of instruction to get an umbrella policy off of your homeowner's insurance and try to cover yourself. So,
yeah, I think to play under that, you know, partnering up with the department is always a good facet, or maybe a countywide training association or a training group. They may be able to attach a very small rider to cover outside users. I know we just got done building a large driver training pad, and PD has already approached us and some other folks. And it's like, yeah, we just have to attach a small liability rider to our department insurance to cover those folks. That, and that may be the best thing that happens for whatever state that they're in and those kinds of things. Or maybe the department's self-insured and they just need, we just need to follow their policies on use of the training facility or appropriate safety measures are in place. And yeah, it's really a great point about, you know, depending on where you're at, what state you're in, and also what kind of department you're working with, if it's a fire district or a municipal department or self-insured versus, you know, they purchase a product from a company.
Yeah, that's why there's just not, you know, there's not one thing that we can do across the nation to make sure everybody works. Now, I would agree, those of you that are, hey man, the international should have an umbrella policy, that would cost us a lot of money. And we've looked into it, and we just don't have the ability. We're not collecting enough money. We'd have to come up with some type of funding source that would offset that. And it just may not work for everybody. But hey, moving on with this, I'm just curious, have you ever been to convention?
I have not. You know, I was thinking about that the other day, and we had usually the convention lines up with the family vacation. And we looked at this year's, because, you know, as you know, I have family in Seattle, and, you know, it's like, oh, this might line up perfectly if we go to Seattle. And then, of course, COVID hit. And then, but no, there's never been a shortage of wanting to go. It just hasn't ever worked out between school and every and other commitments, and just hadn't been able to get there. So
gotcha. Yeah, I gotcha. Well, now you're on my list of people I'm going to hound to make sure I get you to convention. But you mentioned schooling, so that's kind of the meat and potatoes of our discussion today. Is I want to talk about higher education in the fire service, and I had mentioned before we had got on, I mentioned I've had this conversation with Brian Brush, Chief Brush, who's I think is well respected across the nation, and a really good fireman, teaches a lot, gives a lot back. Very smart individual, well-educated, great firefighter. I mean, he's like the golden rule here. Yeah. But I'm curious, you know, let's some of your thoughts on higher education. Why don't we just start with, where do you sit in your education? What are you doing, and why?
So currently what I have completed, I have an associate's in fire service administration. I have a bachelor's in business, and I have a master's in emergency services management. And I am academically done with a master's in counseling and starting my field experience practicum to finish up that degree field. So I have 91 hours total for this master's of counseling, which is a lot if you compare or look at master's programs. And then I have to complete an additional 700 hours of practicum and internship before I'm done with a degree field, before I'm eligible for licensure. So that's kind of where I'm at right now.
What motivated you to, I mean, you've got, hell, you got 3 degrees and you just decided you're going to put a fourth one on there. What motivated you to go and get your master's in counseling?
Partially because of my own mental health issues. I kind of jokingly said this in the past. I didn't even know I had a mental health issue until someone told me I did. You know, I thought it was normal to sleep 2-3 hours a night. I thought it was normal to drink copious amounts of alcohol at the trade shows or FDIC. I thought it was normal to have intrusive thoughts just pop up in my head all the time, not even doing anything to be quote unquote triggered. Or I could be sitting there playing a video game with my daughter and be thinking about a car wreck I ran, you know, 5 years ago, and not even sure why. So had a member of my own department, one of my officers came up to me and said, hey, I don't think I'm doing very well. And I always pride myself that if you had a time management issue, if you had a communication issue, if you had a leadership or a fire, whatever your issue was, fire service related, I felt comfortable and confident enough that we could develop a game plan to help develop a process to overcome that. And he came to me and said he wasn't doing very well, and he talked to the work comp doctor because that's all we had at the time. And the work comp doctor, I kid you not, pulled out the suicide risk assessment card from his pocket and checked all the boxes and told him, yeah, you should probably call somebody. And so he conveyed to me that he wasn't functioning well. And I kind of realized, ooh, I'm not, I mean, this is about 2017. It's like, ooh, I don't really know anything about this. And so through that experience, I've gotten some additional peer type training, realized that after 3 years in the state of Missouri, them teaching that train the trainer, that I was the only firefighter that had started and finished that training. And through that training, I kind of discovered some more of my mental health, or what I call the my trauma box. So I got my trauma box here, and we had a significant call in 2015 that my trauma box had burped open a little bit, and went on a big bender and stuff, and never really kind of got closed. So through all of that is kind of how I landed on the, well, if I've been in it as long as I have, and I'm struggling with it to some extent, maybe I can go to school, do more than just a peer side of it, and be able to communicate in a way that any firefighter will be able to understand and seek help. So that's kind of how I landed in the Masters of Counseling program. And particularly for anyone that's listening in the Fool's realm, or anybody for that matter, that doesn't think school is for them, don't take tests well. I have a learning disability. I was in LD English for all the way up until my ninth grade, IEP, the whole gambit. My reading comprehension is virtually zero. So I get to read things 2 and 3 times, take shorthand notes just to kind of help comprehend. So I guess the long end of the short is, if I can do it, you can do it. So excuses are just that, they're excuses. So that's kind of where I'm at and how I landed in the counseling. And then through this process, it's kind of transitioned to, well, I think it's going to be a good gig for me to change, you know, at some point, my identity of a firefighter is going to be gone. I'm going to lose it. And because I'm going to retire, I'm going to quit, I'm going to, you know, get fired. Heaven forbid that doesn't happen. But at some point, my identity of a firefighter is going to transition. And this will enable me to still have a connection to the fire service into my golden years. So that's kind of the long-term plan.
I like how you said the golden years. You did that in Kia C. That was perfect.
Yeah.
So getting into the basically the education side of it. And do you consider yourself a professional student? I mean, you've got, this is going to be your fourth degree. Do you like learning like this?
That's part of this realization of either growth and maturity, or I tend to want to, and I'm going to go ahead and tell on myself, but pretty much all of my associate's and bachelor's degree, I never even opened the book, really. And I barely graduated high school. And it took me all the way until probably 2012 to realize how I learn. And I can't learn the same way that everyone was being taught. So for me, passing my associate's and my bachelor's without even opening a book, because in true form of a firefighter, I'll get more money for that book when I sell it back if I don't open it, right? And my wife was like, you know, if you just applied yourself, and I always devalue, I think we do this, and this is kind of a bleed over to the mental health side. We devalue almost everything for the job. And I kept on telling myself during my associate's program, well, I'm not saving lives. I don't know why this paper and this due date's all this important. This professor doesn't know what he's talking about. You know, I'm writing stuff from firsthand knowledge or firsthand experience, and I wouldn't get full credit for it because I wouldn't put references in it, or I wouldn't put in-text citations in it. And I would turn it in, and the formatting would be terrible. My sentence structure would be terrible. And a lot of that's contributed back to my reading comprehension and my lack of understanding sentence structure and grammar. I didn't have enough sets and reps and good stuff to help me be successful. So, through my whole associate's and bachelor's program, I really didn't even open the books. And then the last, I was trying to apply for MBA because I thought that's what I wanted to do. And I had to retake some classes, and I realized if I just done this work the first time the right way, then I wouldn't have to take those classes again. So then I bared down and I took four classes in two semesters, so two classes each, and I got straight A's. I literally applied myself. I literally had done the reading. I'd done what I was supposed to do, not just enough to get by. And then I applied that into my master's work. I never thought I was going to go for a master's. I really just got the bare minimum because, as you talked about in the beginning, my agency's not even a third of the size of your agency, and we require an associate's degree for an assistant chief. You got to have so many hours of college for a battalion chief. I did it for extra pay because we get education incentives. So I thought, well, I might as well get this extra money. And then I got my bachelor's, and I thought, well, maybe I could go do a master's. My wife was like, yes, you can do it. Go do it. Quit being a little baby. Actually, she said, quit being a bitch. But yeah, we've been married 20 years. We're past all the pleasantry parts. So I carried a full load as a graduate student with a wife and a child and a full-time job and extra job and pools and everything else. And I graduated with a 3.78 from my first master's, and really enjoyed the experience. It felt like, oh, I'm done. And then my Charma box opened up, and then I had a couple other instances coincidentally fall into my lap. And it's like, oh, well, I'll just do something that I don't know nothing about. And people like me don't pursue degrees in this field, but as a firefighter, we probably have an unhealthy sense of success that no matter what we do, we're going to be successful in. And I certainly fall into that category, and thought, well, I'm going to do it. So I just got inducted into the honor society for the counseling program because of my grades. So going from somebody who barely graduated high school to never being in the honor roll before, be invited to participate in honor society, it's been a cool experience. So I guess the long end of the short, yes, I enjoy learning all I can. That's one of the maturity things that I've learned through this process. And I'm not very good at statistics. So those are two big things. So
yeah, you said quite a few things that I wanted to touch back on. One was the, was about, you know, being able to articulate an argument and, so the importance of education. And I know there's enough people out there, you know, Mike Rowe is like, hey, we need more tradesmen. Which, by the way, I did read your Facebook page, and your Facebook page says, I work as a tradesman. So we're going to get into the conversation of where you see higher education in the fire service. We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, there's more, hey, we need more tradesmen. We don't need more college. Like you, I was a terrible high school student. If you were to ask my parents, my dad's since passed, but you ask my mom, I don't know if she even imagined how I could have become a fireman. But I did, and I've become a decent student. I won't say I'm a great student, but I'm a decent student. I love learning. And I think that as you, my time as a firefighter is going to end, and I'm no longer going to be, you know, I'm not going to be one of the unicorns. I'm not a Bob Pressler, you know, I'm not those guys. So I am, when I leave the fire service, I'm going to be forgotten. And I think what I see that I'm going to be doing is, I'm probably going to go to college and be a student, you know, and I love learning, be it that it's fire related, you know, wine, food, culture, leadership styles. I mean, I do love learning, but what I see that the benefit of college education for anybody is, getting back to my point, is the ability to articulate a point, to argue a point. And in today's society where we are struggling with people not able to argue Trump versus Biden, or you know, you can hate both of them. It doesn't really matter, but it's very difficult to, today. We cannot, it's very difficult to have a debate. You know, we take things personal. We don't know how to back things up. We take things like, man, I saw it on Facebook, so it must be real. Whereas in college, as you all know, is like, you cannot even use internet. I mean, maybe you might be able to say, just to say, hey, this gives you some context to the argument that this came off of the internet, but it has to be peer reviewed and it's got to be legit. And so I see higher education as learning to do that. And then, and the other part, especially for firefighters, is learning to use critical thinking, to sit down and regurgitate a lot of different things that you've read to create your own opinion, your own thought, and defend that thought through, you know, what you're arguing or your point. So, but yeah, I see that. And, but where do you see college and, you know, education in the fire service?
Yeah. I do believe I work as a tradesman. I do believe that the fire service is a trade. I do believe it's a balance. I don't think you can be completely good at the academia world and not good in the fire, in the firehouse. That quote, I work as a tradesman, actually comes from Brian Olson. He commented that in a podcast a couple years ago. And I remember like screaming in the car, "That's right! That's right!" Because I was in so much agreeance, because that was during the big, oh, I'm a tactical athlete, I'm this, I'm that, I'm none of those things. I've always been a big guy. I'm definitely not a tactical athlete. But as soon as he said that, it resonated so much with me that I decided to put it on my Facebook profile. So that's how you know it's serious and legit, is when it becomes, you know, Facebook, right?
It's Facebook official.
I worked as a tradesman. I learned the trade of a machinist before I got hired into the fire service. So I was working as a machinist and never had any desire to go to college. Never thought, well, the fire service is a safe space for me because I won't ever expect it to be to go to college. And the reality of it is particularly as we mentioned or discussed before, I interact with a lot of different people on a regular basis, both from inside the fire service, community leaders, business people. And I have to be able to conduct myself in a manner that the fire service only would not have prepared me for. So I think particularly if you have a desire to influence or impact organizational process and procedure, budgeting, the role and the involvement in your community, you're going to have to go to college. And I said this, you know, and as you know, I've applied, and back when I was looking at leaving my current organization to the Pacific Northwest, and I always told myself and other people that my education only got me a seat at the table and never guaranteed success, because although it's not important necessarily to the line guys, it is extremely important to city leaders and city administrators, as well as board members of the fire district, because they're representing the community. And oftentimes they themselves are also highly educated. And I think, you know, for me, I always valued the opinion of people of the firefighter. I was told one time for a job, you know, all those fancy degrees are great and everything, but if you want to be a fire chief, you're going to have to shave your mustache off and, you know, not look so much like a fireman, is what he was getting at. I didn't. I figured that if it keeps me from getting a job, then I guess I don't need to work in an organization that's concerned about facial hair. But, and that's the scale of things, that, right? That's what we're looking at. Now, if you interpret my own self-doubt, you know, I look at, oh, maybe my resume will get denied because it's not on the right piece of paper. It's on a, you know, it's not on resume paper. You know, we have all of those self-doubts. But the reality of it is it just gets you a seat at the table. It doesn't guarantee success. It doesn't mean that you're going to be successful. I think the interaction with people outside of the fire service, because we're nomadic in the fact that we only typically interact and deal with people that are in the fire service, which is great. I mean, that's like the point of it, except for there's like a whole conglomerate of people in the world that are not firefighters. So in order for us to be successful in both the firehouse setting and the rest of the world, we're going to have to be able to learn and interact and not drop an F-bomb every third word and, you know, present things with a basis of an argument based on fact as well as an emotional perspective.
Yeah, well, if you're going to drop an F-bomb, especially if you're going to do it in writing, just have a proper in-text citation and yeah, you know, cite it. I mean, that's...
Formatted correctly, you'll get full points. It'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, the biggest thing is don't put an exclamation point behind it, because in most of our academic writing, exclamation points are they're useless. So don't put an exclamation behind it. Just capitalize it, and there you go. If you're
going to do one exclamation point, you might as well do 10.
yeah. Well, we're going to wrap up here a little bit, but you mentioned how. So where do you sit? Do you think that chief officers then, is that where you're going with this? Chief officers really should be considering getting, you know, higher education outside of just what a high school. Now, and you know, in defense, I should say, like in my time, you know, I graduated in the 80s, mid 80s. And so college was not something that everybody left high school to go do. And nowadays, you know, kids are graduating high school with an associate's degree because they're doing Running Start or whatever the program is in their high school when they are attending, you know, outside of COVID. So we are seeing more of our firefighters coming in, probationary firefighters that have bachelor's degrees. And so now we're getting into this, that balance that you're talking about is like, I want that new firefighter coming into the organization with some hard work. You know, they don't have to be in the trades as in, you know, as a plumber or something. It's nice because then they know what work truly is. Right. They have a better understanding. But so we're starting to see this increase of college educated individuals coming into the fire service. My generation didn't have that. Maybe yours didn't either. But you know, is this something that those of us that are sitting in the middle that didn't go to college and now you're a company officer, you're like, man, I want to be a battalion chief. In my organization, you have to have an associate's degree to test for battalion. You know, should we be out going out there and doing that? Do you see that?
I do. And it kind of goes back to, well, we don't want to reduce the minimum standard for people to get in. If they can't do it, then they shouldn't have special, you know, allocations made for them. Well, why wouldn't that apply to the battalion chief level or the assistant, whatever level that requires you to have a degree? And I think, you know, and I'm not a fence rider. I think higher education is extremely important. Is it for everybody? It's not. However, don't be mad if the department doesn't alter the policy to fit your agenda. And I think if the department finds that it's incredibly valuable for you to have an associate's degree, about whatever that degree is, and that's what you want to do, then go challenge yourself. Go get out of your comfort zone and go try. I would 10 times rather fail because I gave it my all than fail by not even trying. And I have failed so many times. I'm not even sure how this is going to get work, how it's going to work out. All I know is this is my goal. And if it doesn't contribute to me achieving my goal, I don't do it, right? So everything that I'm doing is pushing me closer to that goal that I want to achieve. I think it is extremely important that if we already accept the fact, and I totally agree with you 110%, And in order to be a good officer, you have to be a good driver. To be a good driver, you have to be a good firefighter. Totally agree with that. And the same thing with battalion chief. If you want to be a good battalion chief, you got to be a good officer. Great. So we're not talking about people jumping over all of that and then becoming a battalion chief. I'm saying you work all the steps and you get to battalion chief. Yes. The lacking part of that aspect is the college degree. And the college degree, as we discussed, enables you to meet time management commitments. It enables you to write documents that anybody's going to be able to read. It enables you to listen and validate other people's point of views and perspectives without taking it as a personal attack against you, and be able to articulate as to why. And it's just the same with being a battalion chief. If I'm trying to convince my crew or educate them on a new policy, or maybe it's the 57th COVID, you know, PPE change requirement they have to do and why this stuff is important, I can't take it personally if they think it's crap. But it's not a personal attack against me. So yes, college education, particularly for those upper levels, is extremely important. It doesn't replace experience. It doesn't replace time in the seat. And if you're in an agency like mine, who we've promoted officers quickly, young, because of our growing need, we can teach everything else if they have heart and the right attitude. So I don't think it replaces anything. It just makes that learning curve a little bit longer. And I wouldn't dog anybody if they didn't pursue a college degree, but if they're sitting there going, well, I just don't take tests well, and I just don't think I can handle that. I got kids. I got this. Everybody does. It's never going to be a perfect time to go pursue a college degree. My only regret with a college degree is I didn't do it sooner. I didn't have the confidence in myself to be able to pursue that, because I'm an LD English kid. I'm a dumb, you know, I'm one of those special kids. And it was never pushed in my household either to go to college. And whatever BS, you know, excuse that I threw up, it was accepted until my wife stepped in and she's like, no, that's not going to work. So if that's what you want to do, don't be mad if they don't change the rules for you. You have to go do what you got to do. And so I think it's important. I think it's particularly one of those things that we'll make as many excuses. And unfortunately, there's enough firefighters, and we do this all the time, and I certainly did it. We'll sing our sad song to our crewmates, and then they'll rally again, you know, rally for us. And yeah, you shouldn't have to go to college. That's crap. They want these book smart people. No, I want all good people. I want you good on the truck, and I want you good in the classroom so you can be good as a battalion chief. I don't want bits and pieces. I want it all. I want you to be as good as you possibly can be, as good as you can be, not as good as what you think you should be. So,
yeah, I get a bad rap for a lot of guys think that I hate on the paramedics, and I don't hate on our paramedics. Yeah. In fact, I think what you're saying is that whatever you do in the fire service, if you go the EMS route, if you like doing engine work, if you like to be a driver, if you like to be a company officer, you like to be a battalion chief, you best be damn good at what you're doing. And that's what we want in the fire department. We want our paramedics. You know, I don't dislike our paramedics at all. If I'm having a problem, I fell off a roof or I had a heart attack at the command post, which is more likely than me falling off the roof statistically. Yeah. Throw that little dig in there.
Yeah.
I want the best damn paramedic working on me. I don't want the guy that didn't give a shit about being a paramedic and that did it to get in the job. I want the guy that lives and breathes EMS, the guy or gal that wears the stethoscope around their neck all the time that everybody makes fun of. That person is who I want treating me when I'm having my moment, just the same as with any of the firefighting ones. So, you know, I look at it as higher education in the fire service. We want a well-rounded individual that can do everything. You know, the unicorn of a fire chief or an ops chief or a training chief is somebody that earned their licks at the company level, knows their shit, is educated so that they can do the stuff at this other level that is required of them, You know, I left out a unicorn when I was talking about Bobby Presser, but, you know, Mike Lombardo, and you want to be that level, because, you know, when you're capable of doing all that stuff and you can back it up with, I didn't just be a company officer for 3 years and promote to assistant chief of the department. You know, I was like, I've been a company officer for 20 years. I was a battalion chief for X amount of years before I became the assistant chief of the department. And you got to prepare yourself. And kind of going back to your point is, really the only education that is required in my department is associate's degree for battalion chief. Once we start going above battalion chief, the deputy chiefs, the assistant chief, the chief of the fire department, like many organizations, when you look at their, when you look at their requirements for testing, it desires a bachelor's degree, desires a master's in public education, desires, you know, your EFO, whatever it is, but they always leave the window open so that they can pull the person, male or female, that they want that doesn't have the proper education. And what I want to do is, as you said, if I do want to take those higher ranks, I want to have the education. So I'm hitting all the boxes of desires, and hopefully I did all the other stuff, you know, as a firefighter and as an individual and as a good person, that, you know, I made it so that they have no other choice than to pick me for that next level.
Well, I think you hit the head on the nail there. And I had a mentor of mine, I was applying for my promotion, you know, submitting my paperwork and stuff for the testing. And it was like, you want to make sure that you leave no doubt in their mind, the person that they're getting. And it wasn't that I merely skated by with some of those desirables, but it was the fact that if there is somebody else, please bring them in, because I want to learn from that individual as well. If there's someone else that's prepared themselves that to this level and more, I want to learn from that individual. And I think, you know, when we talk about promotion and stuff, you know, and I'm not dogging on the people that worked, you know, a couple of years as a company officer and then got promoted. Small departments have to do what they have to do. And I'm a big advocate of inside folks. I'm a big advocate for outside folks, depending on the situation. So, but I think we get fixated on, because of our bubble, and I have a company officer that's a big friend of mine. I mean, I'm gonna drop his name, Jared Smith. And Jared and I worked together for a long time. Jared is super capable, and he'd always say, you know, you gotta get outside your bubble. And I think we have to do that as well. I think as chief officers, we create our own issues though, right? Because we did our time at the company officer, at the firefighter level, the driver level, the company officer level, the battalion chief level. And for me, I hope they don't expect me to force a door as well as they can, because I haven't done it in a while. And we put together some Woods forcible entry door kits, and I messed up my ads placement because it had been a minute. And it's my fault. I should have been out there doing reps at some point. But we wear the white shirt, and then all of a sudden we think our shit don't stink, or that we can't make mistakes, and we're not humble in our position, and we create all these own issues. Well, why would somebody want to go get a college degree and promote to those upper ranks if we're just going to walk around with the stick up our ass? And I think, you know, for me as a chief officer, I've worked for bad chief officers. I want to be a bad chief officer. Don't think you're going to push me around like a shopping cart, but I'm not going to sit there and say, I'm the best guy to teach basic pumps, or I'm the best guy to teach, you know, fire streams. I'm not. I know the best people. Let me get them to teach it. It's kind of like watching your kid open presents on Christmas. Seeing other people be successful is an awesome feeling. And I've seen a tremendous amount of people pursue something that they wanted and achieve it. And that's almost as much of enjoyment that I get now in my job as I do anything else that I can think of in my career. I have a 3 year guy. It's probably closer to four now, maybe five. You know, I'm just in that part of my life where if it's been 5 years, it's likely been 10. But he's a younger guy, had no background, no experience. He come and climbed with us at our stair climb. And here we are 3-4 years into his fire service career. and was part of Oklahoma Smoke Divers class number one. And that was something that he wanted to do and pursued. And man, I'm just so excited for Andrew Cooper and be able to accomplish that. And it's, the Spire Service journey is so short, and we have so many, and tie back to the mental health side of it real quick. We have so many people that aren't present in the moment. They're just going through the motions. It's like, what do you want to do in your career? What do you want to accomplish or achieve? Set that goal. Let's work towards that goal. And we have a lot of guys that are just kind of not present in the moment, who are suffering, that need to kind of reevaluate and recalibrate where they're at and where they want to be, because this thing is going to go by really, really fast.
Yeah. I think that's you hit a couple things there that was, I thought was really cool. We need more humility in our chief officers. It's okay to fail. You don't have all the answers, you know, and I agree that I'm still kind of attached to instructing at the company level. I spend a lot more time teaching company officer stuff, but I still teach at the company level. I teach with Brothers in Battle. So, and I get a little bit of heat from some of the members in the organization. It's no longer my gig, and I realize it. And I know that I'm not the best at it, but the thing that it helps me out with instructing, while I may not be the best at being able to force the door like I used to be, I know the ins and outs, but I can appreciate, you know, I appreciate the work that they have to do, which from the BC level, from an IC, it helps me with understanding timing and tempo. And when I give a task, I've done that task before. I have a rough idea, you know, when they're struggling at something, I have a rough idea of what it is. And I just don't throw my hands up and go, come on, get this thing done. You know, I realize it. So we need more chief officers like that. So, well, I'll tell you what, I really do appreciate our time. I'll leave you with the last few words and to close out. And I appreciate the conversation and your perspective on everything.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. I think, you know, sitting here thinking about it during our conversation, and I think the biggest thing that I want to leave everybody with is kind of my own personal mantra over the years I developed. I even teach a class on it, not a shameless plug or anything, but I wrote an article about it as well. But success equals effort. So I don't think it's necessarily achieving that level of rank or that college degree, that whatever that egotistical driven goal that you set for yourself, because you achieved that. Yes, that is success. But I think success can be boiled down to something even more so, that the genuine effort that you put into something, that to me is success. So success is effort. And I appreciate your time.
All right. Thank you, brother.